The Reds are still the best baseball team in Ohio. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. This week we'll give our thoughts on the Kevin Love trade and if the Cavs gave up too much.
We'll also get updates on the OSU football team in fall camp and the basketball team as it heads to the Bahamas.
But first, the Indians got the Reds in Game 1 of the Battle of Ohio. Then it was all Reds in the next three games, capped off by a 4-0 shutout Thursday night. For more, we're joined by Zach Meisel from Cleveland.com. Zach, I don't think there's any question right now. The Reds were just the better team, especially in those seven scoreless innings that Homer Bailey threw Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's relative, yes, the Reds were better in three of the four games. Until the Reds get fully healthy, it's tough to draw a fair conclusion on what kind of team they can be down the stretch. You know, I think the Indians have been a streaky team all year. When they lose four games, they always seem to follow that up with a winning streak. And when they win four games, they always seem to follow it up with at least a four-game losing streak. So it was two average teams who were kind of hanging around in these division and wild card races. And, you know, the Reds came on top in three of the four, and they get the control of the very coveted Ohio Cup.
So it does sound like you're not impressed with the Reds at this point, though.
You know, it's tough because that lineup, you know, you have Todd Frazier hitting third. He's had a nice season. Devin Mesoraco's had a nice season. He's batting fourth. And after that, it's really just guys who have been part-time players or guys who have been fill-ins their whole career. I mean, Christopher Negron had just a fantastic series, was named most outstanding player of the series, and he's never been a guy who's been, you know, a big league starter on a regular basis. So, yeah, until they get that lineup full, and it might not happen this year. I mean, Brandon Phillips is expected to be back at some point. Joey Votto's kind of, his status is up in the air. So until they get that lineup a little more healthy, it's really tough to give them a fighter's chance in the NL Central when they have three teams ahead of them.
You mentioned the Indians being very streaky this year. They were especially streaky last year that pushed them into that wild card spot for the one-game playoff. Do either of these teams have a good streak down the stretch to propel them into the playoffs?
I would say if either team did, it would be the Reds, just because of their starting rotation, which has been one of the best in the league for years now. I mean, you have Johnny Cueto. When he's healthy, he's one of the best starters in the National League, and he proved it with a complete game against the Indians on Tuesday. And, you know, when you have him and you have Homer Bailey, who's been just dominant over the last about 6 weeks, and you have Leitos healthy, and you're going to have Mike Leake going, and Alfredo Simon was an all-star this year. I mean, you have five competent starting pitchers. So, you know, it doesn't matter how much your lineup is struggling, because if you're going to get a quality start every night, the lineup doesn't have to do too much. And they have a good back end of the bullpen. So the Reds are going to be in every game. It's just a matter if they can string some wins together. And I think, you know, their deficit is smaller than the Indians' deficit is. So, you know, if one of those teams, if I was going to peg, would go on a hot streak in the second half here, it would be the Reds. But, again, with the offensive struggles that they've had, I don't know that either team is really bound for October.
Even though the NL Central is a lot deeper than the AL Central, you still like the Reds a little bit better than the Indians?
Yeah, just because, I mean, the Indians are 6.5 games out. The Reds are only 4. But, you know, the Indians have played this all season. It's actually amazing the Indians are only one game under 500, given how they've been the worst defense statistically in the major leagues. The offense has been feast or famine, and it's been a lot more famine than feast. And the starting rotation is just been atrocious. So I don't see the Indians hanging around as they have for the foreseeable future. You know, I think at some point they've got to trend one way or the other, and all the evidence would suggest that they're going to trend the opposite direction.
This is moving away from baseball a little bit, but the Indians did just announce that they are making some changes to Progressive Field. Here's a report from Kabir Bhatia from our sister station WKSU up there on what exactly they're doing.
The home of the Cleveland Indians will lose about 7,000 seats, with the area above right field converted to more bar and restaurant space, a greatly expanded kids' play area, and a promenade highlighting Cleveland's diverse neighborhoods like Ohio City and Tremont. Team President Mark Shapiro says he wants Progressive Field to be, quote, a neighborhood ballpark, which will not need to be replaced as it ages.
The sports entertainment experience, still always about the team on the field, but the way fans watch games, the way they interact with games has changed. It's evolved. The way our kids will watch games will be very different in the next 5, 10, 15 years.
Shapiro also touted a major revamp of Gate C on East 9th. He says that street is coming alive. And with more people living downtown, fans expect to be connected to their city.
And that's Kabir Bhatia from Ohio Public Radio Station, WKSU. Zach, they say they're taking out the seats to add more bar space and make it kind of more of a boutique, intimate kind of place. Do you suspect any of that has to do with them not able to really sell out Progressive Field anymore? That was kind of my first reaction to it, taking out 7,000 seats. It makes sense because they're often empty.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely played into it. And, you know, this is a franchise that it's kind of held to the barometer of the mid-90s when they set the Major League sellout streak with 455 consecutive games. And, you know, they are held to that standard by the fans in this town. And I think when you do see that ballpark, at least for the last 10 years or so, you know, most nights, you know, that upper deck in right field is empty. And so this is a way where you're certainly not – you're cutting costs because you don't have to, you know, employ ushers or concession stand workers to work those sections that no one is sitting in. So you convert it into some bar space. You know, you're only selling out two or three games a year anyway. So, yes, those games will have less fans since you're going to cut about 7,000-8,000 seats. But, you know, the ballpark will look more full on a nightly basis, and you're doing something with it that's not just, you know, in Oakland they have the upper deck covered by a tarp on a lot of nights.
Yeah, and so like Jaguar football
doing,
games.
Exactly. So you're not doing something like that. And I think they're thinking of ways to be progressive about it. They've polled fans and asked for fan opinion for the last couple of years, and they're trying to think towards the future. And, you know, this will give fans a nice view of the city, of downtown Cleveland, when you look out towards center field. It'll change some of the ways that the ballpark looks when you enter the park. You know, they're doing some things with some statues. I mean, they are trying to change things. Progressive Field has been around 20 years now, and it's kind of the same now as it was on opening day in 1994. So
that's hard to believe.
You know,
20 years.
Some modifications.
As long as we don't see more pink Chief Wahoo hats, I can't handle those.
Yeah, and the funny thing is they just unveiled a Jim Thome statue last week at Progressive Field, and he's wearing a Chief Wahoo hat. So that'll be there forever, whether they keep Wahoo around or not.
I was about to ask you that. A state senator this week introduced that bill to encourage the Indians to do away with it. But there really doesn't seem to be the political will like there is in Washington, D.C. with the Redskins. There just doesn't seem to be the kind of organic grassroots momentum like there is in Washington.
No, and I think part of that is maybe the NFL versus MLB. I mean, I don't know that, you know, the Indians term itself isn't the thing that people latch onto. It is just the logo. And so you'll see protesters every year on opening day, and then it usually dies down the next day after that. So it certainly, you know, maybe once the Redskins gets taken care of, then everyone's attention will shift elsewhere to a different team or a different logo. But at this point, no, it's not, certainly not at the height that the Redskins is.
We have been talking to Zach Meisel of Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer about the Reds and the Indians and a little bit about changes to Progressive Field. Zach, thanks for joining us.
You bet, guys. Anytime.
Fall camp is underway for the Ohio State Buckeyes. They're over at Ackerman Road doing their two-a-days. Urban Meyer's got them working hard, and especially working hard are the new freshmen that Urban Meyer has brought in with this recruiting class, and they are getting a taste of what Ohio State football is all about. Here's Urban Meyer talking a little bit about some freshmen that have stood out in the early goings.
I mean, this is early evaluation, but really good, really impressed with their freshman class. one thing, just the body types of Dante Booker, Kyle Berger, Sam Hubbard, all the way to the long receivers like Noah Brown and Paris Campbell, just long athletes. And then you got Marshawn and Eric Smith. So our special teams, we're going to try to get those guys ready to play. Really good first day with the young guys. Old guys, it just was a hot one. We went no huddle, so it was a good day.
Urban, looked like Raekwon McMillan and Johnny Dixon were out there with the older guys this afternoon. Is that just off what they showed you in the spring?
Yeah.
I mean, what does that say when you have freshmen who have come in early and do that?
It's rare that we do that, and they also made Champions Club. And I don't know if we've ever really had freshmen make Champion Club on purpose, but they're just guys that over 3.0 students, take care of their business. They act like pros, act like grown men, so we let them practice with a grown man today.
A lot of exciting freshmen on this team, Thomas. A lot of people to be excited about. One thing that they don't need for excitement is motivation from last season, evidently. Urban Meyer says only bad teams need that, and good teams can fuel off their own motivation.
Sorry if you missed. I didn't ever say anything about last year. I mean, that's been long gone for a long time. I'll make the comment, you know, is there a chip on your shoulder and do this? I always take notes throughout the year, and if we have to utilize motivation, I've said this before, it's probably not a very good team. We'll use it, but you're looking at a bad team probably. So we're not, you know, last year I think is in everybody's mind. I don't mind it being there, but we just got to get better and work out. And so I think those are all good storylines. If we do have to use stuff to motivate a team, we've had to. That's a bad team usually.
One problem that seems to have resolved itself for now is the Tracy Sprinkles situation. He was in a bad spot in a club. There were charges against him that were not very favorable to him being an Ohio State Buckeye. Urban Meyer has reinstated him and talked about why he's been reinstated to the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Tracy Sprinkle, he was dismissed because of an arrest, and then some bad words were involved in that, like cocaine or something like that, and it was all dropped. And he was drug tested with the hair thing, which goes back 6 months. And if anything would have showed up, he's dismissed. Certainly anything like that. And it was all, and I was shocked because I've known Sprinkle for 2-3 years now. So he's been reinstated. When that was all drug things or there's nothing, I wanted to make sure before I did that. And we did our own research. And so he's going to have to pay for, he lost his scholarship in the summer, so he's got to pay for a scholarship. He's going to be suspended the first game. He's got every week community service and a multitude of other things to take care of business before he'll ever see the field.
Well, let's hope Sprinkle can overcome all those things and be a good part of this team. He's supposed to be a good player. He's young. He'd add some depth to the defensive line, so let's hope that works out. Also, something else Urban addressed this week, NCAA changes and some changes they're making to the number of contact practices that teams can have.
I think it's great rules. You know, when I first came out, you start panicking, and I can't imagine having 30 practices in the spring and then every day two-a-days, you know. Give the stories back when we were in college. It was every day, 2 days. So, no, I think they're great rules. We've done, you know, over the last 12 years, you always measure your training camp on your first 4 games. That's what I do, and I always go back and evaluate. But also now the concussion issue and the player safety. So we've adapted our practices. And other than that, I think it's all good, though. I mean, I don't see a panic about all the new conversation, it's not legislation yet, but conversation about only 2 contact practices per week, et cetera. I think those are all good. You know, most teams don't. So I have not seen anything come across my desk that did you like that's not, you can't get a team ready.
Just about 22, 23 days until kickoff for Ohio State against Navy. That's over in Maryland at a neutral site at the Baltimore Ravens Stadium. Urban Meyer is going to have this team ready. Camp is another week and a half long. Media day is on Sunday. I'm sure they will be ready for their August 30th kickoff.
The OSU basketball team is not in a hotel. They're not in training camp right now. They're in the Bahamas. Tough assignment.
Yeah, they have an international trip to the Bahamas. They actually played their first game last night against the Bahamas All-Stars and downed them 88-66.
Who knew that was a thing?
And have another game tonight against the Providence Storm. And that'll conclude their trip to the Bahamas, but really a team-building experience for the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Providence Storm, is that a WNBA team? I'm just kidding. I don't know. I've never heard of them. No, it's a good thing. I mean, the more games you can play, the better. The fresher you keep these guys, the better. The more you work the freshmen, the better.
Ohio State hasn't had a lot of opportunities to have international trips. And it was a big storyline, if you remember the ESPN report on Fab Five. The international trip, the freshman class, the Fab Five, really helped push them to their championship potential. It's a great time for younger teams to get to know each other, and that's exactly what this Ohio State team is. It's freshman heavy. There's a transfer from Temple and Anthony Lee, and all these guys are really taking this trip to get to know each other better.
That's right. And for more on that, Thomas went to a recent open gym to talk to some older players and talk to head coach Thad Matta about that trip to the Bahamas.
Call it a perk of being a college basketball player, but the Ohio State Buckeyes right now are in the Bahamas to play a couple of games in preparation for their 2014-2015 season. Going down to the Bahamas, Coach Thad Matta said it was a great opportunity for the young guys and the old guys to bond together as a team.
Well, I think this, you're getting an opportunity to compete for 10 days in practice here. You're getting an opportunity to get into the drill type work, that sort of thing, see how guys function. They're spending time together getting to know each other. And they do that all summer, but this is a little bit heightened. I think, just the travel, in the hotel, the whatever there is there to do. I know there's a lot of stuff. They can have a little more fun with that and like I said, kind of get to know each other.
Like Thad said, they do have each other and they are going to have some valuable quality time. And that's important for this Buckeye team that has a lot of new faces with the transfer in Anthony Lee from Temple and the new freshman they have. This is an important team-building experience for the Buckeyes.
We're going international.
Senior forward Sam Thompson.
We won't have any cell phones. We won't have any distractions that we have here in the United States or in Columbus. So really the only choice that we have is to hang out with each other and, bond with each other. It gives us a great opportunity to grow as a team and really get to know each other.
Because of the international trip, the NCAA allows 10 extra practices. And senior point guard Shannon Scott said it's important that they get a leg up on a lot of teams that aren't taking an international trip.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, we get these 10 practices to really see what our team is about before anybody else can, or a lot of other teams in the country. So kind of gives us a little edge that we get to work on it and see what we got to really improve on right when we start going back in October.
Senior forward Amir Williams says this experience is going to make this team.
Yeah, like you said, it's a team building experience, really just being around each other for 5 days straight with just constant basketball, just being each other's presence on and off the court. It's definitely going to help us build a bond with one another, just getting used to guys, seeing what they like and don't like, being able to trust that person no matter the circumstance like that. And so I feel like it's going to be a huge deal for us.
And Sam Thompson says it definitely does not hurt that this trip is in the Bahamas.
But anytime you're on a beach or sitting in a five-star resort, you can't really complain.
Thomas Bradley, WOSU News.
Did I throw you off there, Thomas?
I see what you did there.
Love is all we need. At least that's what Cavs fans and Cavs management are hoping. Several media outlets reporting now that the Cavs have secured a trade for perennial All-Star and part-time lumberjack Kevin Love. But the price is high. Top overall pick Andrew Wiggins. Last year's top overall pick Anthony Bennett. And a future first-round pick.
Yep, the Cavs are all in for this year. They have put their cards in. They've got pocket aces, and they are pushing all in. They've got Kevin Love, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, the Uncle Drew storylines are out there. This is going to be a team to contend with, and they aren't going to mess around waiting for Wiggins to develop. They want to win this year.
The more I think about it, the more I like it. You can't waste LeBron's last 3-4 prime years waiting for Wiggins to potentially develop into the next LeBron or the next Kevin Durant, I suppose, might be more appropriate. But, yeah, I think the price is a little too high, but it was a seller's market for Minnesota, and mm-hmm. Yep.
Minnesota held the cards. The Cavs wanted Love, and Minnesota knew that. I mean, Anthony Bennett was the top overall pick last year, but pales in comparison to the draft class this year. So we can consider him about a 10th overall pick in this past class. But that's still three first-round picks, and who knows what the future first-round pick will turn into. The Cavs are in it for 2014.
Yeah, the Cavs now don't have a first-round pick till at least 2017. Which I guess in the NBA isn't that big of a deal, But
when you have Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, and Kevin Love, they're going to have those guys through 2017.
Yeah, they're going to have those three locked up. And then if they can do the same thing in Miami, if they can attract guys like Mike Miller or a Mario Chalmers or a Udonis Haslam, just those kind of
role players.
The top tier of the next class of players. If they can get those guys to come to Cleveland, which is no small feat. But if they can do that, then I think it's sewed up. I think they win at least one championship.
It's a smaller feat now that they have the cards. People are going to want to play with the best players in basketball, and right now that's LeBron, Kyrie, and Love.
I'm going to a game next year.
I definitely am.
I haven't been to a game in a couple years. I'm going.
I'm a casual NBA basketball fan. I wouldn't call myself a Cavs fan, but this is the most exciting team I have seen within 100 miles of me ever. I am definitely going to a Cavs game next year, if not more than one.
Yeah, for sure. Something else we wanted to touch on just a little bit. Greg Oden arrested this week, two counts of battery. By all accounts, it appears that he punched a woman in the face and lost all goodwill that he had left with Ohio State fans.
First overall pick of the Portland Trailblazers in 2007. He was an Ohio State superstar. I remember him out there shooting his free throws with his left hand because he was injured like none other. Just a dominant player. I remember the 2007 NCAA tournament single-handedly blocked his way to beat Tennessee. But it appears all that has gone out the window. There's really no forgiving. We've seen this in the past with Ray Rice. People are not going to forgive Ray Rice anytime soon. Now Greg Oden, assault on women is just unacceptable. And in the public eye, it is a death sentence for your public image.
Yeah, for sure. And Greg Oden was this very likable, kind of goofy, bumbling guy. He didn't strike you as a really pompous or self-absorbed athlete like a lot of these guys do. He seemed like a really likable guy, and not anymore. This is just, I was really, really surprised. After covering politicians and athletes for a few years now, it takes a lot to surprise me, but I was really surprised that Greg Oden did this.
Despite looking 40 years old, when he came in as an 18-year-old freshman, he acted like a kid. He was lighthearted. This, like you said, this does surprise me. I did not expect anything like this, but it really is unfortunate and honestly really terrible.
And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can always find us using the WOSU Public Media mobile app. You can always find us on Twitter at After the Score.
You can also find a full archive of our show on iTunes. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.